Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett to review Monday Night Raw. Michael Sidgwick enjoying a well-earned day working from home today. What did you make of Monday Night Raw, the fallout episode following a brilliant Money in the Bank premium live event?
Not good. Better.
Great. I agree.
Better than the vision of the show we were permitted to preview yesterday when you were off, which had one announced match on it at the point about 3 o'clock UK time in the afternoon when we came on to record. We left it as late as possible in the day. In doing so, the podcast network that supports us went down completely because we left it that late in the day to record in the hope that something else would surface after a pay-per-view, no less, a premium live
event.
What
they advertised? Mysterio's Judgment Day.
Mysterio's the Judgment Day because they promoted it the week before. Absolutely nothing else on the card. To such an extent that, and you might know this because you very kindly, out of hours, fixed the tech issues. On your time off, no less.
Exactly.
I'll make a goddamn martyr out of you. Like, on your time off, fix the tech issues because we couldn't. We ended up doing a good sort of 5 or 6 minutes, definitely get us over the mid-roll. Sidgwick put an alarm on his phone to make sure we get through the advertisement bit. And then we finished the podcast talking about, he was educating me on the best way to cook rice. It was very much a backdoor pilot for when we get to do food content where he teaches me how to cook.
I heard a little bit of this food chat on there.
That wasn't just our own sort of office discussions making it onto a wrestling podcast. That was a necessity because there was only one thing to preview. So it was better than what we'd maybe forecast might occur, but that bar was pathetically low, and this Raw nearly tripped over it.
Can I say, I really quite enjoyed this Monday Night Raw.
You can.
Again, Sidgwick isn't even here to roll his eyes whilst I'm saying this. This may be because I had a 3-day weekend, so I was in a great mood when I woke up today, and I genuinely thought...
I'm loving, by the way, situational WWE watching with Adam Wilborn. It's been such a regular thing now. Like, explain it to the listeners. Can I just explain why SmackDown was so brilliant? Did you Fox viewers in America find that when you could skip 20 minutes of the show through entrances or fast forward room, didn't it make SmackDown great? And there's all these live viewers going, no, I say all these live viewers. I'm not so sure they listen to review podcasts. Right, yeah. I think it's like, how can we keep what we're doing without watching it? We can listen to What Culture.
Yeah, I've had a great time recently. I enjoyed SmackDown. We will talk more about that on the SmackDown preview because of the greatest thing in wrestling this year.
Yeah. Like, I cannot wait to discuss that.
Literally, AEW could never.
And would never.
Money in the Bank, I thought, flew by, mainly because I watched it on double speed and skipped through all the entrances. So I watched it about an hour. So that was great. This one... Mm. I did genuinely, I think, enjoy it because there was just some good bits of, like, the bit with, like, R-Truth. And I was like, I get it. Americans, like, it's just not the same in Britain. We've talked about this a lot. When people come out and, you know, be, oh, bloody, isn't it great to be British?
We were as cross as some of the listeners to be missing podcast time for the Jubilee weekend. Yeah. It was just getting in the way of our review schedule.
So I just can't compute the whole USA, USA. Unless we're out there eating brisket, then I get it.
I will say this, though. This Raw... There was a lot yesterday. Part of it was because of Rap Mains on Twitter. But there was a lot of hot dog eating contest coverage this year I saw. I seem to be exposed to quite a lot on the timeline. So for Raw to then touch upon it...
What's your man's name? Joey Chestnuts or something.
Chestnuts, yeah. I think I could take him. Like, I'm in the middle of some running training at the moment and trying to lose a bit of weight. But if I was in a period where I'm at my sort of, like, fight... What do they say about, like, your fighting weight within combat sports? my fighting weight, as if to say, when I'm absolutely just like mainlining cereal at 1 a.m. in the morning, the worst time to be having loads of sugar, but dynamite is good. I think I could win one of these hot dog eating contests, you know? Like, do you know what? Why I think I've got an advantage where people don't realise is because I like dry food, don't I?
Mm.
The whole challenge of a hot dog eating contest is like where you can't have ketchup, mustard, and you're only allowed water to help it get down.
Dunk it for the bun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, that's kind of... Like, I don't need the dunk. I'll just have the hot dog dry to begin with. My palate is readier. Is that can't be a word. Is more readied. Is more readied 364 for the July the 4th.
Mm.
Like, I think I could do it.
Well, join us for Clash Near the Castle, where we'll see it put to the test.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I'm not pitching that. I will say, years and years and years ago, Big Brother had a week where the task was break a world record. And they were given
I remember that.
Book of World Records. What I would do at Clash Near the Castle, if we could come up with a punny name for it or a justification, should we break a world record at Clash Near the Castle? Should we try and do that? I think I could break a dry cracker eating record.
Ooh.
You know, there's only so many in...
Yeah,
I think I could give it a good bash.
Just not cut my fingernails between now and then and hope for the best.
Just hope they're growing like so they look like a snail's shell. I think, you know, cream crackers, obviously very, very dry. What are they called in America? Do they have cream crackers?
Crackers. Yeah.
Graham crackers.
Graham, yeah, really?
Is that right?
USA crackers. Cheez-Its.
No, see, this is it. They've got like cheesy biscuits, as well we know, but... So in the UK,
don't raise me to the racial epithet stuff. So I'm just going to move rapidly.
In the UK, we have Jacob's cream crackers. I don't know what the equivalent of that is in the USA to our American listeners or indeed Canadian listeners. But
Teddy Graham's cinema. That doesn't count.
Google Jacob's
Nabisco cream Graham's.
Possibly Graham's. They say Graham's.
Graham crackers.
But yeah, I think I could wedge about 4 or 5 of them, bone dry, in my mouth in one go, and then just bite down and just. Well, until it like all balls up and then just
wheat thins sounds like something an alien would say. Really enjoys some dairy and wheat thins.
Like when a TV show can't use a brand.
Yeah,
I mean one of them wheat thins.
But coming back to this raw.
Sorry, raw. Yeah,
like the word. I mean, it's a very Wilborn orientated raw.
Okay,
but like on homage to Latino Heat.
Mm-hmm.
A weird new tag team getting formed.
Mm-hmm.
The women's world champs, I should say, teaming up and winning.
Like that.
A great six-man, I thought.
Yeah.
And check this out, Sig. A weapons match actually justified. You never get that on AEW, do you? Huh?
Huh?
Nothing to say, have you?
Well, this is that bit with Partridge when the farmer leaves and Lynn has to walk in. So do you agree with everything I've said? Yes. Yes. Are you just going to like move on to Sidgwick's microphone and like say that you agree? So you agree, Sidgwick, that AEW is bad? And then it's just you.
I. Why I? Right, let's move on before someone inevitably snitch tags me. Don't do that.
Touch grass, don't be one.
Exactly. Right, let's talk about the beginning of Monday Night Raw because there was no, unfortunately, Jimmy Smith. He was on vacation. Do you know who he's replaced by?
I couldn't work out who. They never, like, made a big deal.
Hang on one second. I've loaded the wrong notes here.
Oh,
wouldn't you know it? Kevin Patrick! joined.
This is why he loved it, wasn't it? 3 hours of Kevin Patrick.
Like, yeah, to be fair, you know, for a show opening and they go, Kevin Patrick's on commentary for the entire 3 hours. I was like, well, this just jumped up on like the star rating level immediately. It's like when Meltzer sees stuff in the Tokyo Dome. When I see Kevin Patrick on commentary, I'm like, looks like we're getting a good Raw, guys.
Meanwhile, somewhere in Orlando, the residents of a street haven't slept all night because they're just sort of settling for the night, and then all of a sudden they're woken up right as Raw's about to go on the air. What the f***? Why am I not used on f***ing Monday Night Raw? I'm doing f***ing NXT every f***ing week, and they don't f***ing use me on Monday Night f***ing Raw! Go back to bed, Vic. Go back to bed.
I really thought with no Sidgwick I wouldn't have any extra work to do on this podcast. Sorry. Apparently that's not the case.
I'm sorry. The first thing I thought was like somewhere Vic Joseph is just screaming out a window.
Son of a bitch! For some reason I've got him in an odd couple house with Wade Barrett.
Don't worry, Vic. We'll get him on a great American Bowl.
We'll get him another day. So Corey Graves opened Morgan the show. By the way, why didn't they let Kevin Patrick? Jimmy Smith opens the show, but apparently, no, they wanted the Welcome American voice to start this show on the 4th of July. So Corey Graves said, the WWE Universe is still buzzing in the wake of a landscape-altering Money in the Bank premium live event. That's the most WWE sentence I've ever read.
It is. That's right off the website, that, isn't it?
So Bobby Lashley comes out, he welcomes us to Monday Night Raw. He said he couldn't be more proud to be the new US champion on Independence Day. He said there's no man in any division or any promotion that could beat him for this title. Out comes Mr. Money in the Bank Theory. He says, how come you get to kick off Raw? Great, I am. I'm the youngest Mr. Money in the Bank in history. He compared himself to Michael Jordan and Tom Brady as people wanted him. Actually made me feel more the what chant now make apart from when Austin gets the thing, it now makes me baby faces whoever's getting watered in my eyes.
Yeah, like mixed heels of the fans, doesn't it?
Yeah. Lashley
called say what if you slept with a sister.
Lashley called him an arrogant jackass. Theory said, well, I'm getting a US title rematch against you at SummerSlam, and then the same night I'm gonna ruin the winner of Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I think he said it's the last time they'll ever face. I'll bet it's not.
There was a phrase on this show that like got said a couple of times, and you thought, was it like the last time, the last match, the last man standing?
Yeah.
And it had air of most stupendous two night WrestleMania of all time about it, to the extent where
had the air of once in a lifetime about it.
Everybody, yeah, well, yeah, it certainly did. Everybody's gonna say it and everybody's gonna be near the line.
Never before, never again. Loads of times before, loads of times again. Anyway. Lashley said Theory was going to be lucky to make it to SummerSlam. Theory jumped him, attacked him with a briefcase, and then Lashley hit him with that. It's sort of a choke slam spine buster thing, isn't it? It's sort of a combo of the two. Lashley stands tall to close out the opener of the show.
Oh, God. This again. This again. For a meaningless title, which they can now, Theory's got the briefcase, they can have him. Like, he's won these matches because they're trying to push him, right? Now, because the briefcase represents the push, he can lose a bunch of matches.
Yep.
It's just transparent nonsense for a guy that isn't living up to the billing. Lashley, right, I will say this in defense of this segment. For the guy who they nearly ruined once by making him the all-smiling babyface back in, like, 2007, the first time around, it's sort of working this time.
Yeah.
Like, I've noticed this, like, this last couple of months. I didn't think it would take. I thought they were going to kill him yet again. Fans are taking to him. You know, Lashley is not the guy to give you the full-throated man and arrow intro, but he does it in a different way, and it's not alienating people.
I was less concerned with him cutting a promo than I normally am here.
Yeah, it's sort of... You've got to gauge it on fan response regardless. Like, I might watch this and think, it's not really the Bobby Lashley I want, but the fans in the building tend to be responding to him as this babyface, so we'll take that. I just don't want this match again. Four rematches... Like, almost guaranteed for the SummerSlam already, this being one of the more boring ones. And Theory, yeah, this double-speak nonsense, like, yeah, why are you opening Monday Night Raw? Well, he beat you. Well, I've got the briefcase. Well, right, so losers holding the case then. What do you want me to take from this? I don't like it when they do this. I think it's shortcut stuff. And it's worse when the guy, at least when, I'm trying to think of a loser that lost a lot with it. A guy that was losing a lot with the case that remained over anyway. Dolph Ziggler was losing a lot with the case, but when he won it, the proof was in the pudding. You know, like the losses hadn't meant anything. They can now beat a guy that still realistically isn't that far along in his push that he can afford to lose much. I think it's a nightmare cocktail. I really didn't like this. I don't want the match again. And I didn't really buy much of the verbiage. And sorry, one more thing. Lashley getting to do the, like, earn any promotion as if the forbidden door swings open, when basically the most wide open door swing like remains open, which is Austin Theory's, because every door is open for him. That was a bit of a strange red herring, wasn't it? Like, I know, I'm not suggesting that they're going to interact with AEW or anything, but in the last couple of weeks, you've had AJ being permitted to do the video for Slammiversary. You had Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson sending in stuff from the AEW. Like, there's this little tease that maybe the wrestling world is more open than we thought for little one-offs. And then you get the guy who literally wrestled on Saturday from the company. He was Mr. McMahon's, like, pet project. I thought that was a really weird choice.
Yeah.
And there are very few wrestlers that get to go off-piste with their promos. And, with respect to Bobby Lashley, I don't think he's one. So that felt like a scripted line to tease the total opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Not great, I didn't think. Soz, like, no, I'm worried that this is going to be one of those reviews where you're going to be like, Hamflet, this was class. And I'm going to be like, Wilbon, I hated it. And here's why. I don't know.
I wasn't asked about this. I think Theory's got potential, but I don't see him being world champion in 2022, basically. It's a bloody good job. It's a year-long thing. Like, out of everyone in that match, I'd have bought bloody mad Cat Moss having more potential of a successful cashing. I think Theory might lose the briefcase, for example. I said this on the news to Andy, but at least with the you know, the spectre of Vince McMahon with him, you know, you can tell that they are going to... But Andy said it best on the news this morning, and I think you guys have been talking about it. That's why he said it. Getting real Chosen One Drew McIntyre vibes right now from Theory.
There's a history of this, isn't there? The history of them telling you who their guy is, whether you want them to be or not.
Anyway, backstage interview with the Mysterios before their match with the Judgment Day. Dominic says the Judgment Day are disrespectful. There's no one he'd rather learn from than his father. Well, for now. And Ray said, I like this point. It was 10 years since he'd wrestled in San Diego. It was his son's first match in their hometown, and they got a big 619 call and response thing because we're going to show some respect in the 619. And then we got the match. Balor and Priest from the Judgment Day attack the Mysterios during their entrance. When we come back from the break, they're already in it and Mysterios are in control. But Priest makes a blind tag and blocks a 619 by Dominic. Chucks him into the barricade to take us to another break. Ray makes a hot tag when we come back from that break. As a Tilt-A-Whirl DDT, seated senton, but Balor comes in to break up the cover, so Dominic knocks him down with a kick. Then the Mysterios finally hit 619s on both Priest and Balor. Ray goes for the frog splash. Balor, who's in new gear, gets his knees up and transitions that into a cradle. Then introduced a chair. Oh, no, sorry. Priest introduced a chair. Balor used it to get rid of Dominic, but Ray saw the chair, bumped for it, a little bit of Latino heat there, the Eddie Guerrero spot, and the ref turns around, sees Balor with the chair, sees Rey Mysterio selling, calls the match right there, a DQ finish, but one I will allow.
Well, fans went nuts for it, so there was no punter in there that was unhappy with the outcome of the match featuring the hometown guys, so you have to take each non-finish in WWE on a case-by-case basis, yeah. I guess. There's that many of them. You kind of have to, you can make the assumption about a lot, but then it's most, not all. Sometimes the odd one works, and I think this one did. It was odd that in a Rey Mysterio hometown show, this was one of the weeks where, like, every now and then Rey Mysterio will just fall in love with Eddie Guerrero's legacy all over again, and they'll just pick a week. And this was one of them. I thought, well, this could just be a Ray week if you wanted. It is San Diego.
Yeah.
If anything, couldn't you have Dominic just doing loads of Ray spots and have it be about the two of them? But by the by, they built it into the match from the beginning, so it was something that made sense. It wasn't just an out-of-nowhere Eddie spot, you know. So I thought that was fine. I thought Finn's new gear was interesting because I like wrestlers experimenting. I like them sort of embracing a new look or trying to match up or whatever. But it's the old adage in WWE was that you switch from long tights to short ones if you want to get into the main event and stay there. Vince McMahon likes his guys in trunks. Miz did it, Jericho did it, etc. After the Judgment Day have been relegated to main event, then Finn goes to long tights. I understand trying to, like, Edge cut his hair for this thing. And he's already been booted out of it. Is Finn the next one to go? It's like, right, change my look, I'm all in. Damon Priest's like, you're not good enough for the Judgment Day. Until, like, he has to, like, do the Randy Orton off the Hell in a Cell. I've got to be the ultimate member of the Judgment Day, I've got to judge myself. And he does the finish.
Those young guys.
Hit the lights on myself. And then the lights go out and he just does the finisher. So I don't think that's necessarily, it doesn't bode too well for Finn, but I like the look nonetheless.
Yeah.
Dominic Mysterio, is he ever going to get it? Like, there was some of the mind-melting hesitation, like, where seconds feel like minutes sometimes. You know that bit where, like, he goes to the floor? It was like a nice spot in execution, the blind tag, where Finn was laid on the ropes, but Priest went to the floor to catch the 619, strong enough to catch Mysterio by his legs and pull him to the floor. Like, the two of them just looked like they were wrestling in treacle, trying to get him out of the ring. Because, like, Mysterio seems to, like, Dominic, I should say, takes this, like, extra step just to try and get it. And it's just, I've never taken a bump in my life, right? But is that not, like, a natural wrestler thing that at some point, remember, like, that Louis Theroux WCW documentary where he's running the ropes and he's taking about 15 steps to do it? And even there, they're saying, you've got to clear this ring in, like, 4 steps max. Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. You want to be getting rope to rope. Like, the extra step that he puts into these things just feels like it brings the entire match to a halt.
It reminds me of something that Sid often says, which is when you're ducking a clothesline, if you're throwing the clothesline, throw it as if you're going to hit it.
Yeah.
And if they don't get out of the way, you hit them with it.
Aye.
It's one of those, isn't it? Like, so Priest, a very experienced wrestler, young guy in the Judgment Day at least, but a very, very experienced and talented wrestler. If he's been told, or you know that the spot is, he'll catch a 619, throw it as if you're going to hit.
Don't slow it down.
What's the worst comes from it? Mm-hmm. You hit the 619 and he drags you out of the ring anyway because he can improvise. I think you're like, that's the reason for the hesitation. It's confidence in yourself and trust in others. I think that's one of the big things that the hurdle he needs to get over next. And mullets aren't a thing. I'm sorry. I'm not having it. Anyway, from one Eddie Guerrero homage to another man who did it, Logan Paul, of course. They showed the video of him signing for WWE. I think he's a fantastic addition, I've got to be honest. I know he carries a lot of baggage with him from his history, but in terms of getting eyes on the product, that boy gets attention. He's a great celebrity, a bit like Bad Bunny in terms of just getting people to be like, oh, what's going on with all this? And, of course, he's got history with The Miz, who's getting interviewed by Megan Morant, who says, you know, he's proud of what happened, despite the fact that Logan Paul was calling him out for SummerSlam. He said, you know, he surrounds himself with yes men, but not me. You know, I helped him, and I helped him grab the headlines like he does now. But, you know, the only reason I did that is I was looking out for you, buddy. WWE's a different animal. I don't want him to make the same mistakes that I did. Look, Logan, just, he tried to be threatening here, and it's hilarious when The Miz tries to do that. Withdraw your challenge, join me, we'll win the tag titles, and if not, I'll be relentless and you're going to be humbled.
I don't know.
And then, then Megan Morant was like, what about your tiny balls? And he said, I got big balls and I'll show you later, basically.
I suppose we'll later on maybe talk about the match that appeared to be growing from what came later on Raw for SummerSlam. Logan Paul, right, we were in Dallas for Logan Paul's debut and it was very well received. Like, he clearly had, he'd mastered very quickly what we were just talking about with Dominic Mysterio. His instincts were far superior to Dominic Mysterio's. What he did in the ring was more than passable, and a lot of the little things, a lot of the space between, he clearly had a fantastic knack for. It's obviously what he's been super successful at selling himself on. But wasn't that not all him turning himself up to 11 because he made for a brilliant heel? I've got significant and serious reservations about them trying to try him as a babyface already. He was coming out in those promos. Remember when there was like they were building the match? And he was, like, just decked head to toe in his own branding. And there was one week where, like, they were in, like, Logan Paul's backyard somewhere, and they were still getting booed. He's just a loathsome creature. Mm. He's this, like, the Colton Bond celebrity. There's so much to dislike about him. And yet, in his first match, where he works effortlessly as a heel, a natural villain, they turn him babyface. And now he's been signed full-time, he's going to work babyface, and he's going to appear for the first time as a babyface at SummerSlam, we would assume. I don't know. I'm not against the signing. I think it makes a lot of sense with what WWE is nowadays. I think a babyface Paul run is a very hard sell.
Unless he's got AJ Styles in his corner.
Yeah, like maybe he'll learn one of AJ's moves and they can perform it in tandem. Maybe like the phenomenal forearm. Mm. He's got that in his locker.
Be glad to be doing that phenomenal forearm.
They hit them in stereo and that's like, you can't not pop, I suppose. Like McAfee started as a heel against Adam Cole. But his athleticism was just such that you couldn't not cheer him.
Where's SummerSlam Nashville?
Yes.
Just have Miz come out and say, bloody hell, country music sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Logan Paul's like, hey, I quite like country music, actually.
He's got a cowboy hat and he's with Southern States AJ Styles.
I will give Logan Paul credit as well, because he's got this new drink that he's invented, which is apparently quite nice. We can't really get our hands on it over here in the UK. But he's partnered with KSI, who, of course, he had the boxing match with, the famous British YouTuber.
Right.
It's called Prime. And if anyone from Logan or KSI's team's listening, I'd love to drink a little bit of it and promote it on the podcast.
Send us a box.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll give it a try.
Every time you see Logan Paul on camera, new game to play, spot the Prime. It is in everything. He walks out, just getting a bit of sustenance before my match, or I'm signing the contract with a big bottle of Prime on the desk.
I did see that one, yeah.
So next time you see a little video of him, see if you can spot the Prime. We got a 4th of July party hosted by the Street Profits, because they're great, of course. Mm-hmm. Did I hear whispers that Montez might be getting a singles push?
Yeah.
Hang on. That merits a full Renee, that.
Oh, my God.
So I'll catch you up briefly. The Usos were... Remember that kind of like dropped thread about the Street Profits not really getting along?
Yeah.
Well, the Usos picked it back up 24 hours before Money in the Bank. They were like, rumours are you're not really getting along. And the Street Profits were like, I thought those rumours were dropped weeks ago.
Yeah.
It doesn't feature into the match one bit.
Great match.
Great last 2-3 minutes. Like, it doesn't factor into the story of the match whatsoever. Not really, anyway. And when the Street Profits lose, it's because of a referee getting a call on Montez Ford's shoulder was up. Angelo Dawkins was unable to make the save. And if you wanted, you could apply. Where were you, man? Like, if they were going to have dissension down the line and that was going to lead to the Montez Ford singles run. But neither that nor pretty much that match was acknowledged here because the Street Profits are too busy having a party.
Yeah.
So that felt weird. Like, you've flagged this up. AEW has a nasty habit. It's typically with the women, but with this week it was quite a few things where they just didn't really like acknowledge certain stuff on Dynamite to make you realise just how important some of the events of the pay-per-view were.
Mm-hmm.
This was sold as one of the big talking points from Money in the Bank, and outside of, well, a bit of wordplay, pretty much, it was just, oh, well, anyway, barbecue time. I don't think this was the best follow-on from the Money in the Bank match.
Although Tez looks absolutely jacked right now.
Oh, he looks amazing.
I'm very excited to see if that plays out. Although they're probably going to get a rematch, like you say, at SummerSlam.
And, you know, if the singles push doesn't work out, he's very welcome to be a host at whatcoach.com. Check out his interview with Wilborn on our YouTube channel.
So they're having a party, and there's Riddle and Dujebi and Shelton Benjamin and a load of other people who aren't wrestling on this show basically knocking about. In comes Alpha Academy. Thank you!
Shush, please!
Chad Gable comes in and says, you lost on Saturday. And they say, well, no, not really because of the shoulder-up stuff. And Montez Ford mocks Chad Gable. So Otis comes in and says, don't you disrespect an Olympic hero, especially on today. Not tonight. Of all the nights, not tonight. And Angelo Jorkin says, well, hang on, he served in the Marines as well, so you can't be flagging him off. And then somehow that became a hot dog eating contest between him and Otis.
Sure did.
And I was like, I like where this is going. And then Balor and Priest attack the Mysterios in the back because this feud must continue, of course.
Aye. We're getting that again, aren't we? I think that we talked about this on the preview yesterday. Have you seen the vignettes that initially were spooky enough for people to think it was Bray Wyatt? But
I think it's Sting.
I think, well, I don't know. I did see a chin.
Yeah.
I think it might be Sting's chin or possibly Shawn Michaels' chin. Yeah, it's Edge. And
yeah,
there's all these like flashbacks to like moments of his career, wrestlers that he's faced and stuff like that.
Big bottle of shampoo.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. All the best years, you know. Bed for life sex. There was this angle here where Rey Mysterio got beaten down. Edge and Rey were partners. It's coming up on 20 years since Rey debuted on SmackDown. And of course, the SmackDown 6 era where Edge and Rey Mysterio with tag partners against Los Guerreros and Kurt Angle and nobody. So I think you could see Edge teaming with either Dominic or Ray against the Judgment Day.
Not Dominic.
Well, against the Judgment Day at SummerSlam, but who took the bigger beating here? Like, they're going to do, I will avenge what happened to your son. From the hospital bed, Edge is going to be like, Ray, I'll go into battle against
him. And then Dominic will be annoyed at his dad for leaving him behind.
Who on the SmackDown games had the best execution of the electric chair? It was Edge. Dominic's going to electric chair Edge. Just like we always said at SummerSlam, he's going to electric chair Edge, and Ray's like, from the hospital bed, what are you doing? It's like, I'm sorry, Dad. Like, by the way, I've learned a new move. Electric chair on you! From hospital. Just like we always said. He's going to electric chair Edge somehow at SummerSlam. Remember back in 2019 when Edge said he was never going to wrestle again? We said in SummerSlam 2022.
I call bollocks.
You're going to get electric chaired by Rey Mysterio's son. Well, that guy from the Eddie Guerrero feud. Just wait, because this is going somewhere.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Then we got AJ Styles versus The Miz. Fairly straightforward contest, this one. Went to a break about a minute in. AJ Styles dominated. Springboard forearm to the outside. That took us to a break. When we come back, Styles dominates, as I said. Wins with a phenomenal forearm, but it was all about what came afterwards, which was an attack from Ciampa. Styles fights him off, goes to hit the Styles Clash, but Miz catches him, hits the skull-crushing finale, and then Miz and Ciampa shake hands, and Corey says something about a leading man and his supporting actor or some bollocks. It's funny, we're getting Miz and Ciampa as a team, apparently.
We said this weeks ago when we realised that it was, in fact, nothing to do with the Judgment Day, and it was the fact that Tommaso Ciampa has been running interference, quietly running interference on Miz for the better part of a month now. I watched just yesterday, I picked up an old NXT thread on Twitter, at Mike Lamphlett, if you want to see it. I've been reviewing old takeovers for years now. I'll never finish if I can avoid it because they're just so much fun. Watched the Revival versus DIY from Takeover Brooklyn 2. Solid. Really solid, Wilborn, actually.
Great fun of Mills.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. It was like, you know, in WWE where like you got to keep your head on a swivel. And my head swiveled clean off over 24 hours of what, 12 hours maybe, of watching Ciampa with Gargano just kicking off the story, the epic DIY tale to this, where he's The Miz's friend. It's beyond the map. You couldn't be The Miz, but you could be The Miz's friend. The Miz and Ciampa versus AJ Styles and Logan Paul. That's weird.
I'm kind of here for it.
I'm not here for it. I want to see, you know, Ciampa's got them long jackets.
Yeah.
I want to see The Miz make him bedazzle it so their entrance gear matches. That's what I want. I want Ciampa to be forced to wear Miz stuff, a headband, shades. Like Miz being like, you know why you're only a supporting actor, Ciampa? Is because you don't have that leading man smile. And then he goes and gets like veneers put on his teeth or something like that.
Ooh, I like that.
I want it like Ciampa's, you know, like when like Willow, his daughter, was used as like the NXT program, wasn't he? Like he's a family man now. It's not all about Goldie, it's about his wife and kid. I want to see Miz like going, shows up at the Ciampa's house and it's just like a nice, modest Florida home. Ciampa's happy, he's got his wife and he's got his kid. And Miz is like, what the f*** is this? And he queer eyes him, basically. And he makes him get this ridiculous beige palace like the Miz and Maurice have got. And Ciampa and his family have got to uproot and move into this ludicrous home. For total Ciampas. Or like Mr. and Mrs. Ciampa. Like one of the episodes, they do like, you remember when, you know, they did like Total Bella Bull? Dan. Like you see a parody where Ciampa and his wife and Willow have got to live like the Miz's for a week in prep for the SummerSlam match. I've talked myself into thinking this is going to rule.
Told you. Gonna get there. Also, I can easily see The Miz doing Ciampa's backslapping spot. It works really well.
Oh, yeah, like, and yes, sitting on the ramp, yeah, sitting on the apron and doing it. Yeah, I'm quite into that.
We get a video package from, I haven't time to talk about this, the brilliant call to have Liv Morgan winning Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. She cashed in on the same, not just once. I'd like to have the Money in the Bank briefcases stick around for more than 24 hours.
Carmella held it for the record period of time, and they're not giving anyone longer than a day since then.
Yeah. Cashed in on Ronda Rousey, became SmackDown Women's Champion, and then came out to cut this promo, and she got a great reaction. Of course, she got "You Deserve It" chants. She thanked them. She shouted about "We deserve it." She's proud to be the new SmackDown Women's Champion. All her dreams came true thanks to an unbelievable night of Money in the Bank. She says she won against six of the best women in the WWE, hardest battle of her life. It was the fans that got her through it, the fans who stayed with her on her journey every step of the way, believing in her no matter what. It gave her the confidence she needed to win Money in the Bank, cashing on the same night against Ronda Rousey. "This isn't just for me," she said. "The championship is for all of us." Out comes Natalia, who says, "You should be thanking me. My sharpshooter is the only reason that you were able to cash in." Well, it wasn't. It's because Ronda got knocked out of the ring and hurt her leg when she couldn't. Anyway, she says she doesn't want to thank you, though. She wants the women's championship. Morgan says, "I'm not surprised to see you, but I'll see you on SmackDown because that's the show you should be on."
Yeah.
If you want a title match, you know where to find me. Out comes Carmella and says, "Oh, I know today's all about the red, white, and blue, but it's about the red or something. I don't know." She said, "Go back to SmackDown," basically. And she said, "Why are you just standing there and tell you should be smacking her like I did Bianca Belair," which is a spot I missed because as soon as the pinfall got counted in that Bianca Belair match, I went, "Yep, cool, thought that's what was going to happen." On to the next match. And Liv Morgan quite rightly reminded Carmella that she lost to Bianca Belair. And she said, "Why don't you make me leave?" And Carmella and Natalya join up and attack in it. And I thought, oh, please, please don't just have your new SmackDown Women's Champion get beaten down. But no, she was saved by the Raw Women's Champion. Convoluted, but the match it got us to, I was kind of all right with.
Yeah, I was kind of all right in general with Liv Morgan as champion. She what they did really well here, and it was mainly down, I think, to her performance and the support, like the fans have. We say this a lot, right? WWE, I thought this was a me thing, but I'm coming to realise this is a lot of people that buy the tickets. Like, WWE doesn't really tell very good stories, or certainly doesn't think very joined up about stuff. So you just want the people you like to have good days at work.
Mm.
I've said this before, right? That's what it is. You shouldn't be that way. You should invest in characters and stuff. You don't think about the actor on Coronation Street on EastEnders and being like, oh, it's Norris seems to really enjoy selling sweets in the shop this week. I think he's maybe dead now. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, you know what I'm saying. Yeah, Grant Mitchell.
Fizz is definitely in Corrie. I saw on the front page one of those TV guys.
Fizz. You know, you want Fizz to be, what's she, a teacher?
She's getting married, I think, spoilers.
Okay. Right, anyway, that's not how you think. You've just talked about the story she's involved in, not what the actor thinks about the marriage.
No, exactly. Plot, right?
So you shouldn't think about it less. But Liv Morgan's performance is excellent. The crowd really, really liked her. And she feels totally real as somebody explaining the hardships that she went on. And what WWE, I think, balanced really well here was, you know, the babyface Money in the Bank complaint, that where it's the least babyface way to win a title.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of opposite of a hero's journey, isn't it? You've taken all the shortcuts instead. They used the Money in the Bank match that she had that night to make it seem as if she'd gone on the hero's journey. She was able to say, I've had the hardest trial of my life,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be true, and then kind of skip over the fact. Yeah, and then I came out and I took out a wounded champion.
Yeah.
I picked the bones of a wounded champion by talking about the ladder match, and I thought that was quite inspired. In Bianca Belair and Liv Morgan, they have baby faces that fans are super, super happy to be getting behind. So pairing them together, if only for one night, was kind of... I wouldn't say inspired. It was just nice.
I would.
It was just nice. It was, the fans genuinely like both baby faces. The heels were easy foil. And the impromptu match was fake and feels totally unnatural and the antithesis of what this show is supposed to be. But good guys, earnest good guys that just behave like good people are the hardest characters to build in wrestling. And they showed that they had two as the current champions. That's nice.
Pleased to report that Norris off of Coronation Street is still alive.
Good.
Malcolm
is the character dead?
Malcolm Hebden, no, they think they just got rid of his character because he's getting old.
Okay, all right.
in the 2001 and 2002 Inside Soap Awards, he won consecutively for funniest character.
Norris's funny stories.
Anyway, then we got the women's champs teaming up, Bianca Belair and Liv Morgan against Natalya and Carmella. And I've got to tell you, there was a spot in this match I absolutely adored. And it involved a sharpshooter from Natalya. I know. Think about how much that has had to change my mind. Natalya puts Morgan in the sharpshooter. It's a bad one, again. Morgan's trying to crash and claw to the corner. She just can't make it there. She's about a couple of yards short. So Bianca Belair puts her braid in and pulls Morgan to the corner. Sort of cheating, but also, I loved that spot.
I would argue, you say sort of cheating, there is law to this braid, right? I would argue that it was so cool, by the way. It was such a cool spot. She needn't have pulled there. That's a tag.
Yeah.
If Bianca Belair was holding the tag rope,
just whip someone with your head, like, tag.
That's a part of Bianca Belair's head. That's a tag. Did not they once, have I misremembered this, was there not a time where, like, Bailey tied her hair up in the ropes and the referee made them break because it's like, that's like a leg being in the rope. That's like kicking, you know, a rope break or something like that. Hair's in the rope, you need to let go. Like, it's established. Law of the hair. It's part of the body.
I love hair, Stuart, when it comes to Bianca Belair.
Now, Bianca Belair, what she needs to do is lie flat on the mat with her foot connected to the tag rope with her hair at full extension. And she can basically ruin the heels trying to cut the ring in half because by that point, her hair has basically crossed the divide. She should just become like an unstoppable tag team champion. Like, well, I've got the cheat. I've figured this thing out. Like sort of go-go gadget arms where you just reach out and tag your opponent while staying in the corner. She's nailed it.
Some other great spots in here. Belair comes in, works over Natalya. Carmella's made a blind tag though. And at one point, she just drop kicks Bianca Belair's head into the ring post. She goes for something. I thought that was another fantastic spot. Morgan hit Natalya with a code breaker. Carmella comes in to break up the cover. So Morgan hits one with her too. Natalya hits that discus clothesline of hers, but Belair comes in to break that up. Carmella dives to the outside onto Bianca Belair. Just together, another showcase of the ridiculous strength Bianca Belair has. Any other wrestler, male or female, goes down on that. You see, it's just sort of, it's not quite mistimed or they're not quite at the right level or whatever it may be. I'm not, you know, that technically minded with that. She catches her and she just goes, oh, bit out of position there. Whoop, up you go, because she's just insanely strong.
She's got it in her, yeah.
Carmella slips out, sends Bianca Belair into the ring post, but Morgan knocks Carmella off the apron. Natalya tries a roll up and then Morgan catches her with the Oblivion for the 1-2-3. Great stuff.
Yeah, I didn't think much of this Raw, but I thought quite a lot of this match. Like a decent tag match just to have in the middle of the show. But the use of the two champions together as both super hot baby faces, smart, wily, with all the physical attributes to win the match, put over the like the stature of both the belts. Again, like Liv Morgan is presented not as a chancer, but as somebody that has like grafted and worked her way at the top, and now she's there, she's going to wrestle her way to stay in there. I liked all of this, pretty much.
We go back to the 4th of July party. Mustafa Ali, poor bastard, now is involved with Cedric Alexander and stealing Veer Mahan's food. He runs after them. MVP's trying to hype up Omos again, saying, oh, everyone had to team up to take you out of that Money in the Bank ladder match, which I did quite like, if I'm honest. And, I don't know, Reggie bumps into him or something, gets murdered. Anyway, Ford and Dawkins are chatting with Ezekiel, who accidentally sprays ketchup on Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins pretends to be serious, does his goofy laugh, then goes serious again, and this sets up a match.
I'm writing an article at the moment, coming soon to whatculture.com/WWE, where it's 10 matches that you will never see again. There are various reasons why you won't see these matches, but one of them I've included is the eye for an eye match between Seth and Rey Mysterio. It's my belief that they will never run this storyline again because it represents the absolute desperation of the Performance Center era. A guy threatening to take somebody's eye out as a way, please watch our ridiculous pay-per-view. They're taking place in an empty gym, but someone's going to lose his eye. Like, please watch. It's absurdist nonsense that doesn't even belong in pro wrestling, right? If you did that to me with the ketchup bottle, I would take an eye out. I don't know how Seth, the man that once extracted Rey Mysterio's eye, played this for him fairly cool. I know they were set to have a match, but ketchup... I couldn't cope with this. I don't like what the, you know, like what the sensory, what's that, is it misophonia where people, the sound of people eating is like too much for people to bear sometimes. So you go to a restaurant and it's like, as if like the music stops, the conversation drops and all you can hear is like, I've just done that to the listeners of the podcast. I seeing somebody doused in ketchup, I just,
your worst nightmare.
How did it happen in the first place? I wouldn't go to a social event with Ezekiel now because if he... We sit down to eat, and he's like, right, just going to put my condiments on, and he doesn't, like, you know, hold the bottle and do it the normal way, but puts it on its side and punches it. What are you doing? That's destined to go everywhere.
Maybe Elias is the one who normally Elrod.
Elrod preps the...
One's on buns, one's on sausages.
Asking the people in Subway to wipe the knife or make my sandwich first. Is that too much to ask? When they cut it and it's got, like, the detritus of the last person's sandwich on it. Like, the whole point of going to a Subway and paying an arm and a leg for a buddy, basically, is that you get what you want. Have it your way, I think is another restaurant slogan. But you get eat fresh, whatever they say. You're welcome to get a sponsorship on What Culture Podcast. Like, all them sauces with the upside-down bottles, I'll just go, no, thank you. Spinach, lettuce, cucumber, wrap it up. Like, I didn't even ask you to cut it. It's like, no, bother, I'll cut it. They might as well have licked the knife. It's that filthy, covered with that ranch dressing or whatever. Cut, 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 cut. And the side of my bread's orange. Why? Why?
Anyway, then we got the match. Seth Rollins versus Ezekiel.
Skip. I am speaking on behalf of that entire building that were bored, rigid by two wrestlers that blatantly should have been doing something else. Ezekiel is missing Kevin Owens. Seth Rollins is missing, well, Cody Rhodes and Riddle. This wasn't it.
I do like Ezekiel's jumping knee.
Yeah, it's all right.
And I did like the fact that he almost won with some cradles and Rollins just went, well, why are you down there? Boom.
Yeah, it was nice. I felt vindication that he got beat for the ketchup thing. But
and then he went to do it again, Riddle. Okay, I didn't feel like he... Anyway, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The 5-star review review. Nailed it.
Ugh. I'm thinking of the ketchup still, sorry.
And this week's 5-star review, or should I say 10-star review,
what?
Comes from Glenn Harrington, who left us this absolutely glowing review. He did leave us 5 stars mm-hmm. on Spotify, mm-hmm. but well, I'll get into it and he'll explain himself. He writes, okay. Hi Adam and all the team. If you want to suggest a 5-star review, of course, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, or leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, and just email me the review, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com.
And while you're leaving reviews or being nice about the podcast, go to the British Podcast Awards 2022 and vote for us in the Listener's Choice Awards. We are nominated, technically, because any podcast over a certain listenership can be nominated. All you have to do is enter What Culture Wrestling in their search box, and we appear in the drop-down. We're the first ones, we're the only ones, if you type in What Culture Wrestling.
We're the ones.
We're the ones. All you have to do is submit your email address, and it's one click, and you vote. The link is currently on our Twitter page, because I put it there earlier on. We'll get another link out as well, but this feels like the best way to reach people to get
exactly
to do it. The men don't like it, so we didn't get nominated in one of the generic categories, but we can be voted for on that one, and we'd love it if you did. But along with that, leave us 5-star reviews, because we're not about awards. We're about 365 24/7, and that is fooling algorithms all year round. So yeah, just 5-star reviews are fine.
So Glenn writes, "Hi Adam and all the team. I've been wanting to leave you this review for a long time, but as an anti-Apple man, I've not had access to iTunes. However, after poaching my wife's phone for a few minutes, I've finally been able to give you your well-deserved 5 stars to add to the 5 stars I've given on Spotify, making this my 10-star review."
Legend.
So what does the What Culture and What Culture... What does What Culture and the What Culture...
So it's a Glenn-star review.
Very good. Mean to me? Well, after initially becoming a fan of the great website articles and Simon Miller's YouTube videos in the mid-2010s, I found your podcast in 2018 during the summer and decided to take up running. Having never run before, I started off by doing couch to 5K and from there progressed to doing half marathons and now marathons, having run the virtual London Marathon in 2020 and all being well, the real thing this coming October.
Yes.
Best of luck with that, Glenn. You guys have been with me every step of the way. I wish I could add up all the hours I've listened, but I've gone through 2 exercise watches and 3 different phones in that time, so I've got no idea. Needless to say, it's well into the thousands. The fact that you produce such high-quality, engaging, amusing, thought-provoking content each and every day is remarkable. You've been with me not only through my running journey, but over the last 4 years, you've been with me through some tough times, such as where family members have passed away, and great times, like driving to the hospital to pick up my newborn son.
Aww.
You even inspired me to start my very own non-league football podcast in which I try and fail to replicate Wilborn's enthusiastic intro style. It's rare for a day to go by without me hearing the brilliant trio of Wilborn, Sidgwick and Hamlet through my headphones. I feel like I know you all so well, but in reality, we have never met, and I find that very surreal to think about. Your podcast provide me with a safe space and escapism from the challenges of everyday life, and for that I'll be forever grateful. I hope one day we do have the chance to meet, whether it's at a wrestling event, a What Culture live show, or even a non-league football match. Thanks, Adam, for the 4 points your beloved Chesterfield gave to my Woking team last season.
Oh, he's done you at the end. He waited and he waited. He wanted you to get as high as possibly could before he pushed you off the pedestal.
Well, we'll see what happens next season, Glenn. Because we're going to win the league. Because guess what? Kabongo's back in training. Oh, my God. It looks so good. And we've signed like 8 other players.
Did Wrexham get out of that division?
They didn't. They didn't. Did they, Andrew Pollard? Oh. You've got that documentary. Oh, look at us. Oh, we're all Hollywood. Yeah, you lost the cup final and you lost the playoffs. You're as good as us. Sorry, I was a bit of a nerve. Sorry, Andrew. I got a bit carried away there. Anyway, where was I? Rather bizarrely, and perhaps uniquely, the thing that got me into wrestling was who's the real mug here? Circa 2013 TNA.
Holy goddamn, Glenn. I wasn't ready for that.
When it was on Challenge TV in the UK, I remember that. Yeah. The first big title change, as I remember, was Chris Sabin winning the title from Bully Ray. I remember that as well.
Option C. X Division champion could cash in to compete for the title.
I'm now an avid AEW fan, which I enjoy watching along with you, and thanks Sidgwick for the great book.
Yes, indeed.
You can get that right now on Amazon. And a lapsed WWE fan, thanks for watching so I don't have to. For my 10-star review, please could you review anything of your choice from the 2013 to 2017 era of TNA so I can feel nostalgic about my slightly problematic wrestling education. P.S. I like this. Using everything you can here. Mm-hmm. I would be very grateful if you could shout out my Twitter, GlennH1292. That's at GlennH1292. My pinned tweet includes a link to my marathon story and fundraising. I'm raising money for the Youth Sport Trust, a children's charity which aims to improve every young person's education and development through sport and play. Any donations from fellow listeners would be very gratefully received. Thanks again for all the great content, Glenn. What a lovely review that is. Thank you, Glenn.
That's awesome.
Best luck with a marathon as well.
Yeah, I've done 2-3 marathons properly in my life and had to train up to them as well. That's 26 miles. So you have to do like 20 to 22 miles in training at various points. I love all the feedback that praises us because my ego just is nourished by it at this point. But running in particular was pretty much how I fell in love with podcasts. Mm. So I love it when people tell us that they go for a run and somehow we are the entertainment they choose, because podcasts for me were to stop me remembering that I was running. So every mile I was listening to podcasts was just sort of, oh yeah, I've ran that, because if I remember that I'm running, I want to stop running.
Indeed.
So podcasts for me are better than music. And for Glenn to say that is a huge honor. Thanks for making us part of your day and part of your runs, especially when these runs are going to such a good cause as well. What a lovely review. Other than the bit where you asked us to talk about some wrestling, because you brought this up in the office this morning, and I had to provide you with the bad news. You know, I like being, you very kindly like called me the wrestling encyclopedia. I like being that. I like you sort of dropping a thing on me on a Tuesday morning that I don't know what it's going to be. Hamlet, give us some backstory and bat. It's like sends my mind going into all these sort of different directions. I start watching TNA in 2013. I had been pushed and pushed and fucking pushed by this product to the point where I could no longer have my heart broken anymore. They had let me down. I loved TNA. I had a particular fondness between pretty much its inception in 2002 up to about 2010. Hogan and Bischoff came in and started breaking the things I loved. I tried and tried and tried in 11, 12 and 13 to stick with it. But at this point, things were just broken beyond all recourse. AJ Styles agreed with me. He failed to re-sign with the company. They wanted him to take, I think, a 50% pay cut. And he was like, do you know what? I think I'll go and become like an all-timer IWGP champion in New Japan and then get a WWE deal that nobody could have foreseen and be WWE champion for a whole calendar year. I'll go, I think.
Who's that recently? I think it's like Frankie de Jong. Is he at Barca?
Yeah.
Someone like Man United have been in for him. And Barcelona have gone, we're not happy with that, but we want you to stick around, but you will have to take a pay cut. What is that as a counter-offer?
Why would I do that? I love Glenn telling us that that's how he got into wrestling, because everybody finds it somehow. And that, to me, is this period where Impact, in terms of how relevant it was, fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
I would say outside of maybe the Broken Universe in 2016, Matt Hardy and Jeremy Borash. A couple of little moments here or there. Do you remember the Jeremy Borash, Josh Matthews feud that brought in Abyss and Scott Steiner? And
yeah.
They dabbling with cinematic stuff before it was a necessary evil in the pandemic. So it had its little moments, but yeah, it was a ghost promotion. They lost Spike TV, so they were going on to these networks that you couldn't find in America. In the UK, still had prominence because of Challenge, as Glenn's pointed out there. Mm,
the not-so-huge pap TV that they went on to.
Yeah, and like the commentary was terrible, the atmosphere was bad, the impact zone was dire. Damien Sandow was coming in and trying to do his own paper. I'm going up the script. There. It was just
Over there.
So much terrible stuff. Which is probably what led me to the first thing I could think of when you said, Hamlet, you got anything from 2013 to 2017? Well, Bon, I do, but you're not going to want to watch it.
Well, I did. You were right. I did want to watch it. I mean, I hated myself for wanting to watch it, but what did we select in the end?
I'm amazed this wasn't on the spreadsheet.
Thank you to Kid Chris, as always.
As always, keeping the spreadsheet. Sorry, Glenn. It's Rebel versus Sherry Martinez from the Knockdown Tournament 2016. Do you want some...
Shelly Martinez, the one who used to be with Kevin Thorne.
Ariel as Kevin Thorne, more successfully in TNA as Salinas in LAX. That was a cool act. They were awesome. At this point, she was a knockout. She was a women's wrestler. They were always trying to be there. Bear in mind, this is when the women's revolution was in full effect in WWE. So WWE had invented women's wrestling by this point, ignoring the fact that TNA had a fairly successful knockouts division back when they were still doing Divas nonsense. Mm. This was sadly not the best exhibition.
Poor Gail Kim.
Hall of Famer.
Impact Love
Wrestling. Impact Wrestling Hall of Famer.
So we had this match. It was some tournament bollocks.
A one night only special.
Yes.
That was what it was, yeah.
And beforehand, there was a little promo from Shelley. She's thrilled to be back in the Impact Zone. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother, who's the only everyone who believed in her dreams, believed in her wrestling. Makes a lot of sense after I watched this match. was the reason why she came back. Unfortunately, her grandmother had passed away. So to honour her, she's going to, you know, hark back to her Mexican roots and the Day de la Muerta, Day of the Dead. And I thought, okay, I got that.
Yep.
And then she said, and I've got a message for you. I've got a message for you, Rebel. And she put her eyes down like a GCSE drama. Muerta. And then she smiled and walked off.
As a GCSE drama student, would you have submitted that and expected a pass?
100%. I'd expected a glowing, like, dark side of Wilborn.
Black and white.
We're there.
Anyway.
Disturbed on in the background. Die.
So I watched this. Then I watched Brian and Vinny, because Brian and Vinny are one of the reasons I got back into wrestling. Okay. I stumbled into Brian and Vinny reviewing stuff, and I was like, this is hilarious. I want to get back into wrestling. I've written this a bit like Big Vinny V himself reviewed one of the other awful women's matches in TNA back in the day, which was, of course, Queen Charmel versus Jenna Maraska.
Yeah.
So I remember Vinny writing about this, and he'd just written in all caps and just words, not even sentences. So the first thing I've written here is outfits. You want to give us a quick recap on the outfits there?
Not really, to be honest. So Shelly Martinez was at this point, playing that kind of, like, what do you describe that as? You know, that, like, death zombie, Thunder Rosa plays
exactly.
But I don't know what the, like, in terms of semantic field, I don't know how you would describe it as an overarching term, but that.
Yeah.
That, like, for anybody that watches AEW now, you got anything on Rebel?
I've written ring entrances next, if you want to just jump to that.
Not really.
She did the splits on the bottom rope.
She sure did. She reminded me of Reba from AEW.
She did.
Kind of.
The commentary says that Rebel is here to defend herself and the women's division against Shelly Martinez.
From certain death. Which I guess she failed to do in this match.
And they point out the winner of this, one of them will go to the main event.
Sure will. That's a tournament. One night only tournament.
Yeah. One of these two.
Sure. These.
Now, this is like a 10-minute clip, but it's well worth watching. Because the first 4 minutes are the entrances and the outfits, as I mentioned. And then them just stalling. They've got a 3-minute match in them, and they're dragging it for 10 minutes. The bell rings, and then they do the boo, yay! I'm going to stand up on the top turnbuckle and get cheers from the 20 people in the fucking impact zone or whatever.
It's not fair on them, is it? Like, it's not fair on these women to be going out there to be asked to do this. They've got characters that are over. They've got a performance style that has a place, and yet Impact are like, you've got 10 in you.
Yeah,
not really. Well, go and make it happen.
Well, check out this trash talk. What's that on your face, says Rebel? And then there's a bit of back and forth, and Shelly's zinger. You don't know what it is. And Rebel says, well, you need to wear it because you're ugly. Which got AEW him. Went, keep that for a few years.
Write that down.
So they lock up, and then Rebel says, I wasn't ready, I've still got my jacket on. Mm-hmm. So she takes off her jacket, and we've all seen where this goes. You've got your jacket. She's taunting and she's folding it very slowly. You throw it at your opponent, they go, blah, bloody hell, what's that? And you lay him out. Yep. Yeah, not Rebel. Throws a jacket and still gets arm dragged. Just,
and you sort of, it plays out as if like, oh God, that was all I had. She got round my jacket assault.
What do I do now?
Do you think the jacket was a stiff shot? I mean, it was a jacket potato.
Yeah. Thanks. The drop hold.
I do that in every Kamajira match. So, yeah.
There's some bad submission attempts here. There's a drop hold into one. Then they're sort of, you know, in the corner. And there's the bit where they're what's the phrase? It's fighting in the pocket. You know, roughing each other up. And the referee has to come and separate.
Between kidney punches and that.
You see it in boxing matches a lot. Yeah, yeah. What you don't see is referees, like Brian Hebner here, going, like you're trying to calm down a horse or something.
You order, order.
So... Rebel sees her opportunity again. Referee separated him. She goes to kick her. Shelly catches it and, remember the entrance, throws her leg down so Rebel does the splits.
Yep.
Which she can do.
She can do that. We've seen that.
But she sells a vag. Well, we know where we're all heading. This is the story of the match.
Yeah.
Shelly hits a sliding dropkick to get a two count.
Do I tell that story on a podcast? My friend, a female friend, and I want to say that my now wife was in the room while this happened.
Okay.
Had an injury down there.
Okay. And down where?
Down there! And it was all bruised, and she showed us it. I want to see my bruised vag? And we were like, yeah, I think we do, actually. And it was like, yeah. Like, you know, my wife, now then girlfriend, now wife, was in the room, so it was like, you know, there was nothing... off colour about it. Well, there was about the badge. It was blue. I think all blue. But from that point on, I was determined not to be that idiot pundit that's like, little blows don't work.
Yeah.
It's not a body part. It's Still hurts.
That's in the same category for me as, well, she gave birth a week ago. Why can't she be in the Rumble?
God, yeah. That, like, fantasy, what? Fantasy booking these women.
I get booking Seth in it. He's not busy.
Hospital's the only one who's in 40 hours. I don't get it. Well, WrestleMania or something.
So anyway, Shelly, yeah. Rebel's on the floor. She's doing the splits. Ooh. Shelly drop kicks her, gets a pin. 1, 2. Rebel kicks out, right? Rebel's the first up. She's straight up. Boom. Straight up. Goes and hides behind the ref because it's time for the next spot, yeah. Basically. And then the most... this popped me more than the My Vag stuff coming. The most telegraphed sort of Rowdy Roddy Piper eye poke I've ever seen. And then I had a sort of a flashback to, yeah, the Divas division when they were brawling on the floor. Thanks to Brian Alvarez once again, who explained that what next was apparently meant to be an abdominal stretch.
Right. I was going to ask you, MMA enthusiast, to talk me through some of the submissions in this match.
Well, that got transitioned again, thanks to Brian Alvarez, into a banana split, allegedly.
Okay.
Which, yeah, the commentators, I mean, at one point in this match, they just start talking about something else. Like, don't you hate it when all these people keep interrupting you? They've just given up, right? But they're confused about what's going on. They're like, oh, it's down for a cover. Banana split. She's stretching her legs. And this is the infamous, my vag! My vag! Spot from Shelly Martinez. Again, pointed out by Alvarez that afterwards, you know, the referee's like, you know, normally like, Michael Hanford, do you want to submit? You know, are you saying you quit or whatever it may be? Brian Hebner's phrase is, what are you saying? As in, what are you saying? Are you saying I give up? I don't want any more? Uncle, whatever. Shelly Martinez takes that as, what are you talking about? So after the submission, they've been separated. She's like, just to clarify, if you were unaware, I was saying that my vag hurts.
The second, because she says it twice loudly. So she goes, my vag. My vag!
Like, she also looks for a camera.
Oh, she finds it. A second is like a long time, isn't it? One or 2 seconds is a long, long time. You don't realise it until somebody is screaming vag for that period of time. It did occur to me that Shelly Martinez, I can't get this out, Shelly Martinez could be a hard-boiled police woman on NXT 2.0 who like won't follow the rules. So like in one of her, she's like, she's trying to solve crimes. Mm-hmm. She's babyface, but she's not doing it. Like, she's not doing
by the book.
She's not doing it by the book. By book. So she goes, like there's somebody in the next team. There's apparently a chief of police in NXT 2.0. Used to be William Regal. Don't know who it is now. But Wade Barrett. Like, you know, sort of. And she sort of goes in and says, like, you've got to follow the rules. You want to be a goddamn policewoman? Like, do you even want to do this anymore? And he's like, well, I guess not. And she goes, you want my veg? Here's my stinking veg.
Well, that's given her an idea for tonight at the Great American Bash.
Oh, my God.
Jeremy, thank you. I'll just move on. Jeremy Borash says, I wrote this down verbatim. That's an abdominal stretch. Wait, now it's... I've seen a lot of wrestling, and sometimes you just have to sit back and see who's victorious.
I've seen a lot of... I thought he was going to go, I've seen a lot of wrestling, and this isn't it.
Yeah. So the backup, Rebel goes for a handspring elbow. I've seen, you know, handspring elbow is sort of like the go-to thing sometimes. They give it to, like, Kelly. Kelly, they gave it to Snooki, didn't they, at WrestleMania?
Yeah, you got backflipping, yeah. It's not easy.
At least, yeah, it's not easy. And either your opponent stays there or they move. Mm-hmm. Shelly moved about halfway through this move. Rebel's up. She's still going to hit it.
It's happening.
She missed it. There's some hair throws. There is allegedly a head scissors. It's just a spinning throw. I've no idea who's meant to be getting hurt here.
Yeah.
And then it's time to take you home, ladies. Rebel goes to the outside. Shelly Martinez is meant to hit, or go for at least, some kind of dope suicida.
Yeah.
And I think, we've discussed this, we think that Rebel's meant to kick her, hit her with a foreign object, do anything.
Something.
Because what actually happens is Shelly just runs to the ropes, and then gets caught up in them. A handstand. The legs are caught up in like the top and middle rope.
We've never taken a bump in our life. We have to say this.
Absolutely.
Wrestling is incredibly hard. These are gifted professionals. Mm. How did this go so badly wrong?
Well,
how did the two of them conspire to make this as bad as it looks?
Thankfully, commentary says, well, those ropes are close together. So he covers for them. And Rebel, I was going to say, steals a pin.
Yeah.
Crocodile rolls with her for a bit. And then I think this was, it wasn't Boris. Who's the other one? Oh, Josh Matthews. Yeah. Just goes, it's over. And yeah, I think the injured Vag was the key point playing into the finish.
Man, just like, I wonder if a little bit Glenn wanted this. Because there was like flashes, minuscule flashes of good from TNA. And they said, I think, did this fall in the era? We've covered James Storm pushing Mickey James in front of a train before. I think that might have been for this era. I'm not sure. But bits and bobs were half decent. This was obviously not, but how you give us that frame, that time frame, and then we consult the spreadsheet and this hasn't been covered. How could you have expected anything else?
And then we go to the comments section. God, I forgot which about do this. Not reflect the use myself, Michael Hamflett. I know he's not here, but I'm going to cover him anyway. Michael Cedric, the Daddy Boys, anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Kaleidoscope starts us off, simply writes, 10 stars, brilliant match. Omega Okada could never do better.
Glenn agrees. 10 star review.
Yeah. Mini Lemmy, we've already started. Right, this is probably the worst women's match of all time, but it did have two massive things going for it.
God, just there's so much pornography on the internet, I've heard. And open a new tab. You don't even need to close this tab.
No.
Pause the wrestling, open a new tab, pay for some pornography. Sex work is work.
Mm-hmm.
Masturbate to completion, to climax, to issue. Mm-hmm. Manipulate yourself to issue.
Yep.
Clean up. Close the tab. Finish watching the wrestling. Jesus Christ, man.
Obviously, this was mentioned a while back, this video.
Yeah.
Super Wood writes, who's here from Nia Jax? And True Blue replies, it's not as bad as What Culture made out. Hey! You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Love getting a mensch.
Nick Allen writes, I see that nothing in this match has aged well, except the pain of watching it. That has aged like a fine wine laced with cyanide. also, you know me, Hamflet, love a comment section. Particularly love an argument in the comment section.
Okay, all right.
But particularly love an argument in the comment section about this.
You son of a bitch, I mean.
The Man of Shadows writes, oh, love Shelley's sweet naturals. Adam Martin replies, implants. Johnny Boogaloo,
okay,
an expert clearly in this, says, they're real, and you can tell fake would have big veins near the top. And the Man of Shadows finally concludes this argument by writing, well, they sure as hell move like real jugs.
Just these two dude bros in a comment section of a wrestling video. Like, I think you'll find I'm the real sex haver. Well, actually, I'm the real sex haver, and I know my way around fake and real tits.
Mm.
There's only one large vein that Johnny Boogaloo sees, and he's got it in his right hand.
Cool Bean 94 Vivo, nearly at the end now, writes, Shelley's Wikipedia page states that she made her debut in 2000. He's written this a while back, obviously. She's been wrestling for almost 17 years, and somehow she makes Eva Marie look, well, like a better Eva Marie.
Oh, God. Just poor Eva Marie. Just living a life, and then just gets taken down by a sniper in the comments on somebody else's match.
In a weird backhanded compliment. But once again, these comments do not reflect, I'm actually going to include him in it, do not reflect the views of Glenn, Hamflet, Cedric, me, anyone at What Culture, basically.
Oh, God.
Particularly not this final comment from James Henderson, who sits down 11 months ago and just goes,
come on.
Simply writes, I'm here for the mummy milkers.
How does it happen? How? Well, to be honest, how do they search anything when they've got the dicks in their hand? But how do they go to the comments section and, I can't open another tab to watch pornography, but I can open another tab to enter breasts synonyms into Google.
Mummy milk.
and come up with something that in my mind is better than breasts. When I was, I remember in English, I'm about 13, 14, and we looked up breasts in a thesaurus.
Smart.
The school internet computer in 1997 was not available. And it stuck with us. I have a WhatsApp chat that was called this up until a little while ago, and it changed. You know, those ones that change names based on whatever the pattern is at the time. In this thesaurus, I think it was like a Collins one, a proper one. Breasts. Seats of affection.
What?
Seats of affection. And that for a while was a WhatsApp. Like, our WhatsApp group, me, you and Sige, we have some fun in there. We plan a few podcasts, all sorts of stuff. Might have to change that to Mommy Milkers tonight. Mommy Milkers.
So thanks once again.
Our wife's like, oh, here you out on the drink with tonight. I just the Mommy Milkers lot.
Shout out to Glenn Harrington. Thank you for your 10-star review, and hope the running goes well, especially with a...
He's just got through like a mile and a half there. Haven't listened to that. Hope the view was nicer than whatever was in your ears.
If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of a match or something awful on Monday Night Raw, you can do so on iTunes, leaving us a 5-star review. Or, as I said, you can do a 5-star review on Spotify and just email the review to me if that's easier. adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. Otis has eaten more hot dogs than Angelo Dawkins, but Akira Tozawa has eaten more than them, both of them combined. 48 he'd eaten in the time it had taken them to eat 23 and 22, respectively.
Wacky, funny. I think I could take him. I think I could do 50.
Well, then we got...
Don't make me prove that.
Imagine that. So he just had... I mean, obviously it was earlier on today, but Even so, you've just eaten 23 hot dogs. Now time for a match where you tag in with Chad Gable and Theory against Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. This was a great six-man, I thought.
Yeah.
They need to introduce trios titles for me.
It would just be funny, wouldn't it? It would be really impeccable patter if they did.
So I did like this spot where Lashley and Ford did in sync delayed vertical suplexes, doing a salute.
Sort of ruled that, didn't it?
When then Angelo Dawkins, because I felt a bit sorry for him because he was just doing, oh, I'm the cameraman.
Yeah.
Then he did a brilliant dive to take everyone out. So that was great.
Really cool.
We go to a break.
Yeah, this match was good. You know, I'm being harsh to it, but this was pretty great.
It felt like a house show match.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a lot of fun watching it. Heels are in control after a break, but Lashley gets a hot tag. Theory obviously just gets out of there at that point and gets Gable in. Gable gets hit with a flatliner and Dawkins pounces Theory over the announce table, which looked great. Lashley hits Gable with a power slam. Otis comes in to break up the cover, but it's feeling a bit iffy right now.
Uh-oh.
He tries to fight everyone off. The last thing you need when you've got a bit of, you know, stomach repeating on you is a spear followed by a frog splash. Gable came in, though, to get involved, and he hit Ford with a Chaos Theory suplex, which Ford sold like death. It looked great. And then Gable hits Lashley with a moonsault. That gets a two count, but Lashley fights back. Spear, 1, 2, 3. Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits get a win. And then Otis puked sausage all over the ring afterwards, which they did in a super slow-mo afterwards, which is not appreciated.
It's not appreciated by us, but the guy that they have to, you know, sort of work for every single day of their lives would have loved it. Vince McMahon would have been... That would have been slow-mo on Vince's monitor before it was on ours. I just want to watch that. Like, probably the main event was going on. And, like, the referee was probably... Got any messages for these two, Becky and Asuka? He's just watching the sick. That's him now. That's just him till he falls asleep.
Yeah.
It's like leaving the kids in front of like Peppa Pig or something like that. I just put Vince in front of Otis being sick for half an hour. He'll nod off. Oh my God. The exchanges between Chad Gable, Montez Ford and Bobby Lashley. Yeah.
Yes.
Unbelievable. So slick. So like real looking, but... like cooperative to the point where it would be impossible if they weren't cooperating. Does that make sense? Like, and yet it just felt so naturalistic and just, amazing. Yeah, that you're right there. Like if it wasn't for the Shane McMahon input of sick, 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 this really would have been just pretty great in its own terms. But it'll only ever be remembered for vomit humor because that's all Vince McMahon knows.
Yeah.
Is it weird that we've done this review and we've ended when it comes to hot dog content on Otis spewing bits of sausage everywhere that I want to... go with you on dinner. I've got a really healthy lunch downstairs.
Me too,
I want to go with you to, like, Gateshead's best kept secret, the Tesco's deli counter, for a giant Cumberland sausage. So after all of this discussion.
It's made you peckish.
Oh, man. £1.80.
Bargain.
They go to Tesco's for a Cumberland sausage in bread. Blew your mind, didn't it?
It's insane.
Like, you can't get a sausage sandwich for under £2 now.
The cost of living crisis is awful. And every now and again, you just get a little glimmer of hope.
Every little helps. It's not Tesco's. It's your skinflint mate who likes easy food.
Yeah. Megan Morant says, well, good luck to Otis after that. After they've made it 6 times. She's interviewing Becky Lynch. She says, no one cares about Otis. She doesn't get to share her spotlight just because he ate too many hot dogs. She's mad. She's pissed off at Asuka. The main event is no holds barred with them two. And Asuka, she said Asuka was not ready for no holds barred Becky. Nice bit of alliteration. And then R-Truth came out as Uncle Sam. And I thought, oh, what is this bollocks? And he does a gimmick where he's, you know, dressed up in all the stuff. And he says, oh, let's remember Independence Day. Let's remember the troops. Let's remember everyone who made the sacrifice in the 1996 film Independence Day.
Got him.
Will Smith and Goldblum. Yeah. But I was about to go, this is going nowhere. Who should come out to save the day but Ludwig Kaiser? And he cuts this promo and says, piss off all you American pig dogs. And he does a big introduction for Gunther, who comes out despite Truth leading USA chants. And he comes out and he slaps that bollocks off Truth's head and wrecks him in a minute. Lariat, powerbomb, 1, 2, 3. Eat that, Uncle Sam.
We've said this on the SmackDown, but it's kind of effective, isn't it? Like, they've got...
He's fighting John Cena at SummerSlam, and I can't wait.
I'm into that. Like, this is the most archaic, dated, tropey nonsense. Like, the world should more be about coming together than revisiting old stereotypes and trying to tear it apart, but not in WWE. Mm. Like, stinking Americans. I wish they'd done a Jubilee thing. Like, and Gunther would gone back to NXT UK and just battered some flag-shagging losers or something like that. I'd have been into that.
Even a babyface then.
No. Yeah, he would have been. This is pretty cool. They are really, they're doubling it. Gunther is Rusev from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, WWE will never ever tire of foreign menaces, and American crowds will never tire of cheering the American against foreign menaces. So I do kind of feel so dated, and yet I understand why they go back to it every sort of 2 or 3 years. It's getting over.
It's great. And Gunther looks incredible, obviously. Yeah. Alexa Bliss chatting with Sarah Schreiber, says she's happy for Morgan, but she's quite fancy holding the title and then getting a little title for Lily. Just get rid of it, I don't care. She said, she's about to cut more of a promo and then Asuka jumps in. Being Asuka, she's going to become the next champion. And she does the wacky Asuka stuff, which always makes me smile a little bit. And then we got another mysterious video, as we alluded to earlier. It's Edge. And then we got a video package for Reigns Lesnar. And then it was time for the main event, Becky Lynch and Asuka going to war in our no-holds-barred match. And they come out and there's chairs and, you know, trash cans and all that. And early on, Asuka drop kicks Lynch into a chair that Lynch had wedged between the ropes and then gives her a bulldog on another chair. Lynch fights her off, though, and hits a fall-away slam onto a big pile of chairs outside the ring. Lynch picks up a chair, but she gets sent through the barricade. Oh, my God, I've never seen that before. with a running hip attack from Asuka, which, you know, in all the weapon stuff was quite fun, I thought, as a way to send us to break. When we come back, Asuka gives Lynch a superplex onto a pile of chairs. That gets her a near fall. And then she plonks the trash can over Lynch's head and body and what have you and kicks it and punches it and then hits a missile dropkick for a near fall, which I thought was great. She goes in the ring, does Asuka, after the crowd start wanting tables. Stop asking for tables in matches where they're already doing mad spots.
People love tables.
But she goes underneath it, pulls out a table, and then it goes out and takes a drink of the thing that makes the mist. but also pulls out her umbrella. She goes to attack Lynch, but Lynch gets the umbrella off her, and as Asuka goes to mist her, she opens the umbrella to protect herself. Asuka knocks her down with a back fist, goes up top, but Lynch follows her up there, attacks her, and manhandle slams her through the table for the 1, 2, 3. Slump's over.
Apparently so. You mentioned in the six man that it was, I think you did anyway, that like there was a sort of house show fun quality. There was to this too. I don't know if I'd stand with faint praise or not, really. I thought this was okay. I wasn't as high on it as you were when we were talking about Raw this morning in the office, but I will say that they kind of achieved two things here. Number one, a little bit of me thinks that they went out here, to show that they absolutely could beat the shit out of each other with weapons because they didn't do a very good job of it on Saturday.
Yeah.
I think that both of them were kind of fight to just, like, not claw back any sort of reputation lost, but just things did not go well. It was an ugly, poorly worked match, a weapons match at that on Saturday. So I think they kind of redressed the balance there and said, look, hang on, we're the top dogs in this division and we can do this. And they did. And, like, all the stuff connected, all of it felt flush. They've got fantastic chemistry of this, we know. It was a weird sort of decider because not only does the heel go over, she goes over in very, very crowd-pleasing fashion because, as we talked about, crowds love tables, right? So she wins in this way that, like, it's going to generate a pop. Somebody's going through a table. It's a slump buster for the heel. And I don't know, I felt a bit, like, emotionally disconnected from all of this because she outsmarted her as well. Like, the missed counter was... Like, I get it, right? Becky is learning from all of these mistakes that she's made in this various matches with Asuka, and it's Asuka that's pulled out the table, so it's she that has to go through it. But I just, like, I don't know. I thought this was really confusingly laid out.
Yeah, I get it.
And I get that Becky needs to... I understand that when you're on these kind of runs, Becky needs to win a one and make herself magically think that everything is resolved so that when she presumably now goes, what, back to Bianca Belair, maybe?
I think so, one like, more.
For SummerSlam, she's imbued with all this false confidence.
Got good history. LCST, yeah. Baby.
Like, I did you last year in 20-odd seconds, and I beat Asuka, so everything's fine. And then, like, you know, this is the real quiz, and she loses again, and that's the... Then she really has to be like, no, these fake false dawns can't be it. I have to become the man again if I'm going to be the man. And that becomes the next evolution of this gimmick. So I don't mind that trajectory. I just felt like this was a weird way for them to arrive at that point. I knew a win was forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
No holds barred, very, very crowd pleasing, one over. You're kind of one of your top baby faces, Asuka. Didn't feel like to me the right way to do it. But it was well worked. They beat the absolute tar out of each other, and that's to be commended typically anyway. So it's all right. I don't know. SummerSlam ain't looking it. Like, remember at the start of the summer when Money in the Bank was still going to be at Allegiant Stadium? I was like, how are they going to fill three stadiums? The answer to that question profoundly is they are not.
Yeah.
They just took one out of a stadium. They're not going to try and build a card for SummerSlam. Clash at the Castle is relying on a Scottish guy to win the belt in Wales. Like, they're just not. Mm. The answer was, we don't care. Like, buy the tickets. You.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun in this main event, but I get your criticism of it there and the weird dynamic of it all. But I had a lot of fun watching this Raw, I got to say.
Yeah, fair play to you.
And the numbers. I'm glad it's a short run to SummerSlam, I'll say that.
Yeah, so it's end of this month, and there's not a single wrestling pay-per-view or premium live event in the month of August. Can't remember the last time that would have happened.
Yeah.
But we have it's aimless television on two channels.
Until the start of September, when they just go bonkers.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. And as I said, if you want to donate to Glenn Harrington's a brilliant cause, running the London Marathon, it's at Glenn H 1292. I'll make sure I got that right, Glenn. And thank you once again to Glenn for this week's 10-star review. If you want to write a 5-star review or anything above 5, I'll take.
Yeah.
You can do so on iTunes or, as I said, email them to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. Me and Hamflett will be back later on today to preview NXT the Great American Bash, of course, tonight. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.